Hey, before we get started, I just wanted to say thanks to our longtime sponsors, Aureus Medical Staffing, helping you, physical therapists or physical therapist assistants, find jobs all over this country with positions in all settings in all 50 states. Find out what they have for you at AUREUSmedical.com. That is AUREUSmedical.com.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pintcast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love
you. I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Cheers. And we're live. Welcome to PT Pintcast. This is a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight. Amazing insight. Remarkable ideas and motivational stories in the world of physical therapy. Hi, I'm Jimmy McKay. I'm a physical therapist. I'll be your host this evening. Joining me live from the Aureus Medical Studios, also known as my bedroom. Welcome. Find them online at AUREUSmedical.com. That's AUREUSmedical.com. They are the leaders in hashtag travel PT. Let that PT license of yours take you where you want to go. Positions in all settings in all 50 states. You can even have a travel buddy. We just talked to some people the other day. They traveled as a pair. You can do that. Alaska, Hawaii, yes, positions available there. So AUREUSmedical.com. During the show, please keep your hands and feet inside the show until it comes to a full and complete stop. You can ask questions or drop comments live if you're watching this, because we do broadcast on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, doing the socials at PT Pintcast as well. So feel free to comment or drop a question for today's guest. Or if you're watching the replay, just shout out replay so we know you caught it in the after. Today, really, really exciting show. I'm pumped. This is something we referenced in a program last week. And we're going to talk chronic COVID-19 rehab, where PTs really get in the game here with the thing that we've been talking about for a while. It's been taking up our lives, right? So we're going to get into where does the physical therapy profession, where can we really start to make great strides in chronic COVID-19 rehab? Our guest tonight is a physical therapist who works at the ARC, not that ARC, a different one, Abilities Research Center. That's Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City. She gets to work with industry partners, research teams, physician teams, innovators, and collaborators to implement new technology into rehabilitation clinical practice. Yeah, PT gets to do this. How badass is that? Additionally, she gets to serve as a PT and clinician on new research studies, investigating the use of technology to improve rehab and human performance. Welcome into the studio right now. Let's welcome Jenna Tosto Mancuso. Jenna, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you for having me.
It's your own cheering section as you come in. Hell of an intro. Working for Sinai in New York City is a big deal. And you get to do all that stuff, industry partners, research, physician, treating, studies, the whole nine. That's a big deal.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's definitely a unique position for we as a physical therapist to be in. But hey, what better person to be in the space of rehab and research than a PT? So yeah, I'm super lucky for that.
We get the hard questions out of the way first, Jenna. So first question is always the hardest. What are we drinking today? What's on the show?
So I went for a dry rosé cider. It's rosé. Nice. It's cider. It's from Long Island. So like, how could you not be happy about it? So yeah, cheers to that.
I like that. I'm going with it's summer. I don't know what about summer, just Corona. And we're talking Corona vibe. See what I did there? You see what I did there? Match the beer with the food. All right. Thank you very much. First round brought to you by our friends from Owens Recovery Science. You want to talk about research and stuff like that. Johnny Owens involved in research for BFR, Blood Flow Restriction Rehabilitation Training. He started at the Center for the Intrepid, working with those recovering from limb loss accidents and BFR and how to strengthen. So find out more if you want to bring that into clinical practice, bring into the first round, OwensRecoveryScience.com, plus their podcast on iTunes, the Owens Recovery Science podcast. So Jenna, we bring you on the show. David Petrini was on like a week ago, 2 weeks ago. I don't know. It's COVID years. It feels like it's March 876. We've never gotten past March. And David just kind of gave it an update. We talked to him early in March and then just again a week ago about where things are going. How's working at Mount Sinai? How's everything from your perspective? How are you is my question.
Well, thank you. I'm actually doing pretty good. So I'm sure, you know, David highlighted it early on and then in his talk last week. And, you know, New York here, we got hit really, really hard in peak surge, right? March, everything kind of came to a screeching halt. And then by April, we were in peak surge. So our programming at this point has taken a pretty interesting pivot. You know, in the beginning, we quickly adapted, we pivoted to take some of our programming, specifically our remote patient monitoring program, where we as PTs were monitoring patients pre-COVID, looking at patients after having a stroke. So monitoring them from a home base using tech interventions that way. When COVID hit, we pivoted around, redesigned the program to address acute COVID. So then we were monitoring acute COVID patients, really tracking symptoms, identifying red flags, triaging them. The cool part about that program, it was mostly physical therapists and occupational therapists. So again, just this idea of taking your skill set and pivoting. And more recently, right? So at this point here in New York, it's already August. I mean, like what month are we?
I know.
At this point, we're really noticing that, so this cohort of patients who were in the acute phase with their initial acute infection, there is a cohort of probably about 5 to 15% of these patients who are developing what we're calling chronic COVID. They self-identify as long haulers, meaning that they are in the long haul of the symptom presentation. And what's really we found is super unique is that their symptoms are not the classic COVID symptoms. So really on our front at Mount Sinai, we have been hugely adapting for this population. You know, David has a mantra and a saying that's always, you know, if you have a problem that everyone says is not their problem, make it your problem, and that's innovation. So that's 100% what we're about and 100% what we're doing. So we're really pivoting at this point for the chronic patients.
And David mentioned, you know, last week, I had no idea, but these people, and I love when people do this, this is real innovation. A bunch of people were having these symptoms and people start talking and people start saying, hey, you know, this sounds like something else that I know a friend. They made a Facebook group and he said the number, but it was thousands upon thousands of people who were identifying with these symptoms. They were being told by a lot of healthcare professionals, no, it's in your head. Like whatever you're experiencing, this is not COVID, whatever you're experiencing, something else. So he actually tried to join the Facebook group because he's like, hey, I want to like kind of just kind of be here and see what you're talking about. And they wouldn't let him in because they were having such a bad experience with healthcare providers, discounting their experiences, that he actually had to be like, hey, here's the deal. Once he kind of like, you know, explained what he was doing there, they let him in and he watched what these people were saying and you're talking about. How does that make you feel as a physical therapist when you hear these people had to group together because people were ignoring them?
I mean, it's extraordinary to me that this is even happening in a healthcare system. Having spoken to many of these patients myself just through different channels of communication, to hear that their story and hear that they've been turned away and told like, oh, it's nothing, you're fine. When really, again, we as physical therapists, I mean, we step up to the plate. You're treating what you're seeing. You're identifying what you're seeing. And these patients have tangible, real symptoms that they're presenting with that need to be looked at. And of course, we're not going to really understand what it is because COVID just happened. So we as a healthcare community really need to come together and say, okay, I hear what you're saying. Your story is not in your head. I'm here for you. I'm listening to you. And that's so much what I think needs to happen moving forward.
Yeah. I will not turn this into a bitch session, Jenna, but I heard this the other day, which is, you know, overheard someone talking loudly at a public place because they wanted to be heard. You can, you know, when they're just kind of shouting, it was like, these scientists keep changing their minds. And I wanted to just turn around and be like, we are learning things. This is how science works. But I just kind of nodded, kept my face covering on and went about my way in the store. But I was thinking, I'm like, yeah, we see this online. You see this in public. You hear this amongst friends or family. And we're learning things. And that's really what this episode is about tonight is you kind of have been starting to take this information as the Abilities Research Center and really bring it together and say, here's what we know now. If this changes later, that's what we know later. But this is what we know now. So you're kind of like giving an in-service. I love this. We're going technology.
Yeah, boom. Fancy absolutely.
Graphics. So thanks to the Abilities Research Center at Mount Sinai. And walk us through this. Educate us so the PTs listening and watching can learn about this and maybe spot this and help people. That's what we're here for. So take it away, Jenna.
Awesome. All right. So exactly. The idea all of this really spawned from was identifying a need. There is this huge population of people who need our help. And I'm going to get into the talk just a little bit about the symptoms that we've seen in these patients, some of the members of our interdisciplinary team who are really trying to evaluate the symptoms and come up with a solution for how we might be able to address them. So just a little bit about, I know we've chatted earlier on, the ARC, the Abilities Research Center. Our ultimate goal in all of our endeavors is the ability to take new technology and try to understand disease process better, right? How can we take technology, take innovation, and really change the lives of people? So our primary interest, again, is usually in neuro diseases, but we span across disease pathways no matter where we are. And really the unique thing about the approach we take is that we approach things like human performance, the performance training of all of our patients. So we are not a group of clinicians and researchers who say, oh, sorry, that's all we can do. We are always looking for the next step, always bringing things to the next level. So a little bit about the background of how I got to where I am right now, especially with the chronic COVID cohort. So I, as I said earlier in my talk, right, we had our precision recovery program, which was our remote patient monitoring program that we were using pre-COVID to monitor patients after stroke. When acute COVID hit, we quickly pivoted, redeveloped the program to address the acute COVID population. So essentially, we had this cohort of about 1,000 patients in New York City, and it started in New York City, expanded across the country, where they were presenting with acute symptoms. They were completing daily symptom logs on a phone-based application that we developed. From there, a team of clinicians, physical therapists, occupational therapists primarily, were monitoring those symptom data inputs. And should they have identified any type of clinical red flag or any type of risk factor, the patient was then triaged. And so that triage could have been to the home care setting, to the emergency department, or to a specialist. And so again, really what we had found was in this initial cohort, we were noticing these trends of symptoms that were expanding beyond the primary quote unquote hallmark symptoms of acute COVID and were really more of this chronic COVID. As we noticed this in our own cohort, and we were getting more and more media attention regarding our initial acute program, we started making contact with these Facebook groups of long haulers. And, you know, we wanted to know more. We wanted to get in there. So Dr. Petrino really led the effort of us making contact with these Facebook groups, getting in touch with their administrators. And we started doing like a Facebook Live with them. And we were asking them, you know, hey, what questions do you have for us? Can you tell us about your experience? Now, I think all of us know taking a patient history, sometimes you learn more about the patient in that initial history, that initial sit down, than you do anywhere else. So really hearing these patients out, specifically those who have been told, you know, hey, this is all in your head. You're just having anxiety or having depressive symptoms following your initial acute COVID diagnosis. So this is just a nice little infograph of the symptom presentations that we were seeing. So we were noticing things like exercise intolerance, tachycardia, thermoregulatory deficits, dizziness, anosmia, dyspnea, all of these factors that, again, were really different from that acute COVID presentation. So we assembled a team of, it's an interdisciplinary team of clinicians and specialists from a bunch of different disciplines. So I serve as the physical therapist. Dr. Petrino is the physical therapist and innovator. We work with an absolutely incredible physiatrist, Dana McCarthy, who has really been spearheading the effort from the physiatry standpoint. We work with a phenomenal researcher, Laura Tabakoff. She's incredible. She heads our research initiative, as well as a cardiologist who specializes in dysautonomia, which we will get into, a strength and conditioning coach, a breath work coach, and a nutritionist. And that's our core team here.
Well, and we really put, well-rounded.
Yeah, and that was what we wanted to do, right? So we looked at the symptom chart, and we were asking ourselves, like, chronic COVID doesn't have a diagnosis right now. So what does this look like? What does this feel like? What does this smell like, right? We feel like we've seen this symptom cluster in other presentations. And so really what we've come to is that the symptom presentation looks very, very similar to like a post-viral syndrome, primarily with a dysautonomia overlay, right? So this idea that there is some sort of autonomic insufficiency going on with these patients that is presenting with these symptoms. So that's why we picked the team members that we did. We got everyone together. We have a standing working group. And together we are working and we have been working on methods for treating these patients. So at this point, our little work frame at this point is a nice little pyramid, right? The patient comes in for an evaluation, their first meeting with our physiatry team. We have a chronic survey where we are using outcome measures for, you name it, we're going for it. Things like anxiety, depression. We have a symptom checklist that we've established. We're asking patients about their day-to-day habits. What makes your symptoms better? What makes your symptoms feel worse? Really, again, learn about the patient. From there, our goal is to optimize the patients and stabilize. So for the patients who have these symptoms, it's safe to say that the symptoms are not linear. They're not stagnant, right? So one day a patient might have X symptoms. They maybe go for too long of a walk, if they can tolerate walking at this point. Maybe they have a really large meal or they are in a really stressful situation. And now the next 4 days, that initial symptom is exacerbated through the roof, or they now present with other symptoms. So if we've identified anything at this point, it's that there is no straight rhyme or reason for the symptom presentation. Yeah. Every patient's super, super different. From there, right, once patients optimize and stabilize, we move into multidisciplinary team coaching. We work with a breathwork coach who's incredible, Josh from Stasis. They're absolutely amazing. Admittedly, this is a whole new realm of work that I'm learning about. The backing is this was designed by a former Navy SEAL who's really found the impact for breathwork coaching, specifically for patients in a dissimilar population. So we've been adapting that, nutrition, strength and conditioning. I've been working primarily with a strength and conditioning coach who usually works with elite athletes. But he and I have gotten together to do a lot of the clinical practice guidelines that we're developing for this chronic COVID. And then from there, the patient is coming into the PT realm, which is our time to shine as far as I'm concerned. Yes. So key thing, it's a marathon, not a sprint. Shout out to Steve Prefontaine. It really is not something that, you know, it's unlike anything I think many of us have treated in the past, unless you look in the dysautonomia, chronic fatigue space. Really as PTs, we are slated as, you know, in my humble, slightly biased opinion, really one of the key players in treating these patients. Because what we know from clinical practice and the research is that physical therapists are, and exercise and exercise prescription are one of the hallmark interventions for things like this autonomia. And so that's what I'm super excited to talk a little bit further about.
Yeah.
So our symptom checklist, yeah, it's ridiculous and it's ridiculously long. This is just a, these are the prime symptoms that we're seeing. Admittedly, we do in our survey, we have an other category where interestingly enough, I feel like we consistently see other and new things pop up. And, you know, we keep adding to this list as we start to recognize that this is a common symptom among groups of patients. As I had said earlier, some of the really, really big heavy hitting things that we've been addressing are things like the brain fog, memory problems, concentration changes, things like tachycardia or orthostatic heart rate variability, things like I'm breathing faster than normal, I'm not tolerating food, or I have GI symptoms. All of these symptoms together really are painting that picture of this post-viral syndrome, dysautonomia. Something is actually physiologically and tangibly going on, and specifically something that is within our scope to treat as therapists. So what we've opted to do at this point is we have divided our patients out into levels or stages. And the reason that we've done that is, again, these patients are highly symptomatic and their symptom stability fluctuates. So our goal in that beginning is always to stabilize the symptoms as much as possible. So we consider every patient starts at level A, because one day you might feel fabulous, the next day it's anybody's guess. So everybody starts at level A. These patients are highly symptomatic. Really what we're looking for is to identify their asterisk star symptoms or their common symptoms, and we have them rate them on a visual analog scale. Majority are rating them greater than a 5. And they have a significant symptom report. You know, again, we have patients who are checking every box and then adding an other. And this is a consistent report. So again, starting at level A. And really the goal of level A is that stabilization. So we're looking to improve activity tolerance and endurance, improving tolerance to upright, right? Especially when we think about those patients with, you know, orthostatic heart rate variability, tachycardia, dizziness, that's non-vestibulogenic. Respiratory control with activity, that breathwork coaching that I had mentioned, and really, again, that multidisciplinary team support. Our multidisciplinary team in terms of referrals for these patients includes everything from cardiac clearance, pulmonary clearance, neuropsychology for the brain fog and those changes in cognition. We are really expanding that referral source as we start to identify, like, hey, you would be a great member to be on our team. And we're bringing people in as we see fit. So again, stabilizing that patient, supine-based movement, and we're going to get into, I think, the next slide. Yep. Supine therapeutic exercise, always with the goal of progressing to recumbent, then to upright, really making sure that we're encouraging rest breaks as the patient needs them. We're monitoring those symptoms super, super closely, and then trying to identify any of those precipitating factors that might have exacerbated symptoms. So really keeping a very close eye when we change our protocols and change the exercises so that we're able to more closely pinpoint like, ooh, we added an extra rep. And that was the difference between, hey, I feel okay, and hey, I'm paying the price for that. And as a PT, you know, normally I practice in neurology. So I think as a neuro PT, I'm very much, and I think all of us are, I can't even say it's just a neuro, we're of the idea of like one more rep, like you've got this, keep pushing. This is a little on the different end of the spectrum where we want to be cautious and we want to really listen to what the patient's saying about their symptoms. So definitely a slight change in thought, but nevertheless, we are flexible. Sure. We are adaptive. We got this.
Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, usually we understand disease pretty well, right? I mean, you know, I've got books around the room to explain it. We're trying to figure out the disease and develop the rehab protocol at the same time.
And that's exactly, you know, that's 100% it. And I always say this within these talks, I say this to physicians that I speak to about this, I say this to patients, that we are learning as we go. And something that you had mentioned really earlier that I think is so true, right? Everyone's like, oh, they're making mistakes, but this is a scientific process, right? Bring it on back to like, what is the scientific process? And that's so much, we do this every day where we ask a question, we do some data, we learn if we're right, and if we're right, we keep going, and if not, we change course. But I think that we the best thing we can do for our patients is identify, treat what we're seeing, and move slowly so that we're listening to the patient. I, you know, my theory always is like, I know the human body, my patients know their body, so let me listen to their story, let me understand them, and I think that serves us pretty well here. So again, those level A patients, really stabilize. As we move on, level B, right? These are our patients where we've gotten through supine exercise. We've gotten some progress on our outcome measures, and I'll talk about that a little bit, big fan of outcome measures here. We've gotten through them. Everything is looking more stable. The patient, and more specifically you, your clinical judgment, you feel like it's time that we can kick it up a notch, right? So the symptoms are less than a 3-point change on that visual analog scale. Similar, we're taking that a lot from like the idea of like the Buffalo concussion protocol, right? If you have a 3-point change on the VAS, that's changing the way that we're approaching exactly where, like, stop it right there. So we're taking a kind of that same approach here. And the goal is really to initiate aerobic exercise. Really, why is that? So much of the literature and so much of what we understand about things like dysautonomia, chronic fatigue, that sort of end of the spectrum, is that aerobic exercise is incredibly helpful for these patients. Admittedly, it's tough to start, right? These patients are highly symptomatic, and aerobic exercise can be a little provocative, which is why we're taking this very, very stepwise approach. So what I'm going to share here is what we've developed so far. I've been working really, really closely in addition to our interdisciplinary team. I work really closely with Alex Bunt, who is a strength and conditioning coach, who generally works with our elite athletes through our Performance 360 program. But he has been working with me on this, and it's been really fun just because it's this dichotomy of, you know, I generally work in a very different setting than elite athletes. So it's been awesome to, again, collaborate, like don't be afraid to work with other people, get into that interdisciplinary mindset. So for the level B patients, we essentially looked at what was our ultimate goal, right? And so the ultimate goal for these patients is to get them onto what is called the Levine protocol, which is an aerobic exercise protocol, looks to get patients at about 70% of their age predicted heart rate max, looks to have about 30 minutes of aerobic exercise 3 times a week. So we said, like, that is way too aggressive for our patients right now. How do we scale for them? And so what we've done is we've broken it down week by week. So week 1 and 2, it's really just that initiation of exercise. We're doing everything in intervals. So patients doing 1-minute interval of walking. While the patient's walking, we're monitoring their heart rate variability. We're monitoring their visual analog scale for their symptoms. And then we're giving them standing rest. And the standing rest was very intentional because of orthostatic problems that these patients might be having. You know, sure, we'll, in theory, we're like, hey, go lay down for a second or go sit down for a second. But that transition from sit to stand or stand to sit could be the difference in the symptom exacerbating. So our goal is to have the patient take a standing rest break, but we're being really, really ginger about it. So the patient's RPE is a 2. We're giving the patient the onus of helping to design that aerobic protocol. Reason being, number 1, heart rates are all over the place. So So we can't really use age-predicted heart rate max as a really reliable source for aerobic zones at this point. So we've opted to do RPEs on a scale of 0 to 10 just to make it really patient-friendly and go from it. So from here, right, every week, the goal is to increase the intensity and the load of the exercise or of the training. So week 1 and 2, it's a 1-minute interval. Week 3, we go to a 90-second interval. Week 4, we go to a 90-second interval, but our goal is to do more repetitions. So we're really playing with how do we slowly and safely and cognizantly change our intervention? How do we upregulate? How do we make this a little more challenging without pushing too far? We keep that RPE at 2 throughout the entire level 1 of the protocol, really with the idea that, you know, again, we're watching that visual analog. How is this making you feel today? How is this making you feel tomorrow? Key thing we found with this still goes to say, right, if your patient's like, yeah, I feel awesome, let's go. Pump the brakes a little bit. Let's see how you feel tomorrow. Let's see how you feel the next day. Just so it's constant monitoring. Same thing goes as we bump to level 2. We're starting to slowly progress. Now we're walking in intervals of minutes, 2-minute walking. Our ultimate goal for this level is to get the patient to tolerate a 6-minute walk test. Reason for the 6-minute walk test, right, is A, I'm a biased party and think it's a great outcome, but also it's really helpful because we can calculate VO2 max off of it. So if we're really trying to objectively get at what's my patient's tolerance, how are they loving my exercise, and more importantly, how is their body loving my exercise, now I'm working our way so that we're making things a little more challenging, but we're doing it safely. So that's where we live in level B. Same thing goes here, right? It's that consistent progression, 2 minutes, 6 repetitions, those rest breaks in between as needed. And then last, as we move into level C, right? Oh, something I do want to mention though, before I get there. For any of these levels, this is not set in stone. So if a patient is unable to successfully complete the full week, you keep them on there until they tolerate, right? There's no pressure to push or advance. There's no like, oh, we're at week 3, you got to jump to the next week, right? If your patient is consistently not hitting their targets, there's no shame in keeping them where they are. Let them build that tolerance. Let them build that autonomic tone. Get them to the point where they can tolerate so that they are successful on the next level and that we don't throw their symptoms for a loop. Lastly, again, that level C, we met our goal, check, 6-minute walk test, raving success. Next, moving on to our more advanced protocols. And so this would be initiation of a submax test and then initiation of the Levine protocol. I don't know, I'm assuming I'd mentioned it at some point, right? The Levine protocol, gold standard for dysautonomia, highly, highly supported for intervention specifically for patients with POTS. We are adapting it for our patient population, again, because their symptom presentation closely mimics similar symptoms in that population. We're modifying as we go to make it appropriate for the chronic COVID population, but again, everything is a work in progress. So here I just did a little bit of a recap. How do we run the submax test? I am a really big fan of the YMCA protocol, largely because it can be done on a bike or a new step, depending on what you have in your facility, going for the goal of recumbent-based aerobic assessments first and most foremost, and then progressing to a treadmill. If you have only a treadmill, right, you might start a little bit more slowly. Maybe you spend a little bit more time making sure you've cleared out the level prior to before you move them in here, right? For patients who aren't tolerating, like we talked about, the 6-minute walk test and why we love it, we can get a VO2 max off of it. So for a little crash course refresher, right, YMCA protocol for a submax, we're working in stages. So we are taking a patient, they predicted heart rate max. We're starting them at 30 watts of the intensity. And based on their heart rate as we go through each stage, we're making that decision if we should increase the watts. And so your goal is to get through the 4 stages to get a better prediction for your patient. And then from there, yep, this is a nice little broken down explanation of it, as well as a nice little link I can always feel free to share. Great article. And this is just an example of how I document it. I always get the question of like, well, how do I document this stuff? Well, quick little cheat sheet of how I like to throw things in. I'm a big fan of graphs because it makes life easier to check what you did the last time. And then from there, we can move into the Levine protocol. So goal, 3 sessions a week, 20 to 30 minutes each session, 70% of an age predicted heart rate max. Really what we're still working through is, what do you do if your patient's heart rate variability is a little all over the place? I definitely argue honing in on the use of the RPE for that one, which is definitely supported in the literature. Other things to consider, right? Warm-ups, cool-downs, definitely important. And the goal with the Levine protocol, at least what we've seen in the PUCS literature, is to make this a, you know, a long-standing thing for patients. Patients who get on this protocol, many of them stay on this program indefinitely. The goal is always going to be to make the patient more independent with the program so that you can transition them out of the clinic and into a more independent space for completion of the program. And here's the article, big fan. And outcomes-wise, right, we're at this point thinking about endurance, strength, cognitive status, and quality of life. So endurance is that sub-max or six-minute walk test. Strength, MMPs. Cog status, we're using the mini-mental. And I didn't see this on here. I must have accidentally erased you. But quality of life is the FF12. Keeping it really short and sweet for the patients. We, in our setting, are doing this ahead of time. So we're sending these out as surveys. So patients are not using their therapy time to complete any of the self-reported ones. And then we, as the PTs, are running through the patient outcomes that we can complete. So my final thoughts, my final takeaway from all of that. So again, it's 5 to 15% of people, which is a pretty significant cohort, if I do say so myself. They're long haulers, right? They're self-identified as long haulers. These are patients whose symptoms far exceed the normal length of an acute infection. We as physical therapists, like, this is our time to shine, specifically because of the impact that these types of exercise prescriptions and interventions can have for the patient. You know, there is no drug cure for this. This is something that is really amazing that we can use physiology on our side and really help these patients. Mount Sinai, we have our COVID-19 rehab program. In conjunction, we have our COVID-19 Center of Excellence. So we're really starting to think about how can we help this really in need patient population. Like we talked about, as per usual, future research is always going to be needed to better understand the etiology and the pathophysiology. And that's definitely something in conjunction to research, to rehab, that our team is also addressing. But yeah, you know, we are a huge team effort and it's a multidisciplinary task. So contact us, definitely reach out to us, reach out to me. As you can tell, I'm super happy to talk about this super at any time.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. All the time. So yeah, that's what we got.
Great presentation, terribly important. And just, I mean, you know, that was a half hour of you of going through it, but wow, how much work had to go into really putting that together, recognizing that. And you mentioned this type of show, right? Seeing a bunch of, seeing a problem where everybody says it's not my problem and saying, I'm going to make it my problem. 5 to 15% of these people right now, that number could go up as healthcare providers, as you mentioned, were discounting when people were saying about these symptoms and saying, oh, it's all in your head and just discount. So that number probably likely to grow, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that we are just touching the surface of where this is going. I think that, you know, as more healthcare providers acknowledge that this is a thing and this is happening, I'm really interested to see how that number grows and how that number changes. I think additionally, as we learn more about the patient experience and we better understand A, the symptom presentation, but also some of the pathophysiology behind it, some of the, what's the etiology, where is this coming from and why is it happening? And I think there are some really, really interesting, provocative, strong theories right now that might give us some insight, but this is still, we're still really early into this.
Yeah. I mean, like, think about this. I mean, people have said this, I mean, about this time, we're living through something that researchers are going, could in theory make a career out of. If you're a young researcher and you're going to study, you know, pathophysiology or disease progression, you've got the thing that you probably do for the rest of your career. Civil rights, are you writing papers right now? Well, you could pretty much just say, hey, I'm going to make this my career, and you could do that. What's the biggest thing that you think you've learned in this past, I mean, since March, which is seems like about 3 years?
Oh my gosh.
What's the biggest thing that you've learned digging into this and working with this population, subpopulation?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I feel like my career has aged exponentially since March, but I think so much what I specifically have learned is just the symptom presentation is unlike anything that I think we as therapists generally see. Again, unless you are in a very unique position that you specialize in something like dysautonomia, or my personal experience where I previously worked in autonomics research. So it kind of like, oh yeah, you know, I get that. I think my real takeaway is just, this is our time as rehab, right? And I think that oftentimes our role is sometimes secondary. Where we go, let's diagnose first, let's surgery first, and then send to rehab. But really now we can step into the forefront and, you know, educate ourselves, get that professional development, understand what's going on, be on top of the research, right? Even if it's outside of rehab research, know what's going on and what the disease process is like, because this is something that I think in any setting that we work in, no matter where you are in the spectrum or the continuum of care, whether you're in acute care, you know, on the front lines, or you're now seeing patients in outpatient, this is something that is going to be present. So it's definitely there.
Yeah, let's make sure these people don't slip through the cracks. You know, let's put some, they've recovered from this virus. Let's make sure they've recovered fully as we can get them.
Exactly. And I think that this patient population, you know, especially because the initial reaction to it was, this is psychology, this is neuropsychology, this is not a pathological or disease process. So many of these patients, you know, they did fall through the cracks of healthcare systems. And I think it's definitely our responsibility as a healthcare system and as a medical field to say, hey, we can treat this. And, you know, similar to anything that I think our team has done and has advocated for, is we don't say no. We don't say, sorry, can't do anything about it. Like, we can do something about it. We're going to learn about it. And it's going to be a very fluid situation, but we're going to go for it. I think that's huge.
You're doing big work. You yourself and everybody you mentioned on your team working behind the scenes, which is to be able to help progress, we have to understand it first. We need to understand it. So that's what you're doing.
Exactly.
So I'm going to flash this on the screen if you want to reach out to podcast listeners, jenna.tosto@mountsinai.org, more information at mountsinai.org, the website. Anything else you'd want to leave with clinicians who maybe they didn't know they were seeing these patients, but now that you're mentioning it, they're saying this is actually 3 o'clock tomorrow or something like that. Anything that they should know or do, or what actions, tactical steps do they take?
Sure. And I think that's actually really ironic you say that. So I have had that reaction. I've, you know, given this in service multiple times, really as we've upscaled within the Mount Sinai network. We have a system of trusted rehab partners, which are other physical therapy practices outside the system that we work with really, really closely. And I spoke with a clinic probably about 2 weeks ago and had that exact reaction where someone was like, you know, I was seeing someone for something else. I cleared vestibular. It didn't really make sense. But now that you're saying this, like, this is my patient. I think really taking that step back, number one, listen to your patient. What are they telling you? It might be right in front of you without you even realizing it. And definitely be very, very mindful about the interventions that you're putting out on the table, right? Think very much so about what's the goal of the intervention. Don't just prescribe something to prescribe it. This is not one size fits all, right? We can't go with a kitchen sink approach for this. So that's definitely my takeaway. It's just, listen. It's out there. We're learning as we go. You're going to learn as you go. And I think that that's really the biggest thing.
Yeah. For me, it was you pumping the brakes on yourself, right? And saying, as a neuro-PT, I would always be like, one more rep. We need to be very careful with these individuals right now. So this is not something that you've seen before. We've never seen this before. We're learning about this. So approach it in a different way, right? You can't just push. We got some people making some comments. Best advocate for our patients. Amazing talk, Jenna.
That is Mark Cortez. Dr. Cortez is the co-director of the Abilities Research Center. She is a neurophysiologist. She is absolutely incredible. So, you know, I think that's just so much the ethos of where we are, especially at Mount Sinai, at the ARC, is our patients need us. This is what we're here for. So definitely don't be afraid to advocate for the profession. Don't be afraid to advocate for your patients.
And if you're ever on the Upper East Side, she will shock your brain.
Yeah, I mean, come on down. Good time by all.
I think I was there a second time hanging out with David, and Mar was there. She was like, "You want to see something cool?" I was like, "Well, yes."
Obviously.
We're going to do some transcranial stimulation. I was like, "That sounds great. What could go wrong?"
I mean, like, sign me up, right?
Yeah, heck yeah, I want to see that. It was cool.
Absolutely.
Are you ready to do three questions? We got three questions coming up.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Three questions brought to you by our friends from Arias Medical Staffing. Again, mentioned at the top of the show, leaders in travel physical therapy. If you're thinking about, I mean, I look at it like this. You're in the city, right? Where are you?
I'm in Queens. I live in Queens, work in Manhattan.
Yeah. So like, but you know, we did clinical rotations, you know, some people were smart and they did them like, I don't know, Hawaii or Alaska or someplace like that. You could treat travel physical therapy as like, you know, I'm going to tour the country for a little bit, get paid doing what I want to do, where I want to do it. Not too shabby.
Power move.
AureusMedical.com. That's the website. So all different settings too. Sometimes people think it's just outpatient ortho. It's not. All settings, all 50 states plus DC. AureusMedical.com. All right, Jenna. First question on three questions is a where question. You just mentioned Queens, right? But if you had the choice, you could go give this in service or work with this bit, whoever you want to work with, anywhere in the 50 US, where would you want to go?
I would definitely vote Santa Monica, but in the middle of a New York City winter. So I could do like a whole snowbird thing, but like in the midst of the winter, right? Get out of the city.
Whenever we talk about this, James Spencer, he's been on the show before, he did Aspen in the winter, and then he would do like Hawaii, Aspen, Cape Cod, Aspen, Florida. Like, and I was like, he rigged the system, but
he definitely did. But that's smart. Hey, it's within the 50 states.
Within the 50. Second question is a what question. What's something that you've watched, read, listened to, a book, a movie, podcast that you just think, and I make this question open-ended, that you think the audience would get value from?
Definitely. It's so ironic. We were talking about this earlier. I would definitely say David Petrino's TED Talk. I jokingly had mentioned I have listened to it on my way in to like interview my first day of work.
Smart.
I'm like, this is like pop-up music. So yeah, highly recommend that if you're feeling inspired and you want to do some crazy innovation.
Yeah, he's got a pretty cool TED Talk. We'll put that link in the comments below. And the last question, I said we begin and end with people. Who is someone the audience should know more about?
I mean, I definitely have to, you know, give it all to my team. And she kind of pumped in and stole my thunder there. Definitely my team at the ARC, Mark Cortez, Dave Petrino, Layla, Erica, my whole team who has, I mean, it's just to see the way that everyone within the health system has stepped up within a crisis. We all, you know, stepped outside of our normal roles. And I'm sure this has happened across the country. And that's, if there is an inspiring thing in all of this madness, it is that we as a healthcare community stepped up and we're in it together.
Yeah, we talked about this before we hit broadcast and during, which is this is a great time for our professions to shine. You know, OT, PT, FLP, like we talk a good game, we got research. Like now we get to get in the game and really help. Didn't want to be the situation, but we could really, really help. Excited.
100%.
All right, last thing we do on the show is called the parting shot. Parting shot brought to you by our friends at the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Find them online at orthopt.org. They've got all sorts of continuing education. If you're looking to level up your orthopedic game, why not do it with the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy? Find them online at orthopt.org. We just had a winner in our last contest. We gave away access to any of their courses, tissue tolerance, the running athlete, two of the new ones. Current concepts of ortho PT. That's the really great OCS prep course. So find them online, orthopt.org. All right, parting shot, Jenna, no pressure. You gave an awesome in-service, but the parting shot all comes down to this. What's the last thing you want to leave? Your mic drop moment for the audience today.
I mean, I think we've said it through the entire talk, right? This is your time to shine. This is the profession's time to step up. So step up to the plate. This is it.
Yeah, step up, put up, shut up, do it. You can
make it happen.
I love how you literally, I mean, you guys are doing innovative things, but you're focusing on the basics, which is listen to your patient, treat what you see. What else does this look like? Does this look like
make
something
you've seen?
Right. So I like how, as innovative as you are being, which is innovative, you're rooting it in the basics, which is the best way to actually make that innovative, scalable, and sustainable. So thank you for that. Jenna, appreciate you coming on. I say we should probably have you on if we want to be, I say you love graphs, right? We should probably have you on in a couple of months to see how this thing has progressed, because we got to
talk. Yeah.
So
we're going to have some lovely graphs for it. So absolutely.
Let's do some more graphs. But thanks so much for the time. Thanks for doing this and sharing it, making a lot of this stuff open source so the rest of us can partake and help our patients ultimately.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Jenna.
Love the PT Pinecast?
Yes. Yes.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play.
All right. Show today brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offering continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, 6 PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what they can do for you to support your professional development at brooksihl.org. Our home on the internet.
ptpintcast.com.
Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting
to providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC.
It's poured fresh by me,
physical therapist Jimmy McKay.
Ingredients are sourced by our chief connections officer,
Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
And it's brewed fresh by producer and physical therapist
Juliet Dassinger.
And by producer and creator, second year PT student
Bridget Nolan from Sacred Heart University.
PT Pintcast is a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pintcast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love it.
I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you found value in the show, all we ask
is that you tell a friend.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.